This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. There's been a lot of talk in San Antonio about some older neighborhoods seeing an uptick in young families moving in, changing the face of the neighborhood, and driving up property values. But a comprehensive study was lacking. Is San Antonio seeing gentrification? And if we are, where is it happening and what kind of gentrification is it? We're talking about San Antonio's changing neighborhoods. How can we amplify the positive changes and manage the growth? And we invite you to join our conversation. What are you seeing from your front porch? Is your neighborhood undergoing a metamorphosis? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 614-8980, and you can email us at thesource@tpr.org. Our guest this half hour, a little bit later, we're going to be hearing from Diego Bernal, city council member from District 1. But right now we've got Christine Brennan. She's the Director of Urban Studies at Trinity University. Christine, welcome to The Source.
Thank you.
So you were asked to develop a study looking at how the neighborhoods are changing. And before we get to that study, though, I'll just talk about the word gentrification. Now, it seems to be kind of a radioactive word, a loaded word, but what is it really?
The gentry, right? The gentry are coming. So the gentry are that upper kind of gentle bucolic class traditionally. Today we use it just to mean change. But if you look at the academic literature, which is where I'm going to reside here because I am coming from the university, there's a lot of definitions of gentrifications. It's been really studied since the 70s, our cities have been changing. And even before that, but there's a lot of different definitions of it. And so when we went into this study, we did so not creating a new definition that was San Antonio specific, but went back to the literature and said, okay, what do some of the people that have studied this nationwide and even worldwide say that it is? And then even more interesting is what's the process that drives it?
Right. So when I first started hearing about gentrification, I guess it was in the 70s with New York City and reading about it in the Village Voice and how there was a lot of coverage about how the rising property values were driving people out, and that's where it kind of got its negative taint.
Sure, rent, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's probably the definitions that a lot of people will refer to are the economic ones, but there's social definitions, there's cultural definitions, and there's even physical definitions as far as the physical landscape itself. But the economic definitions are really that the housing prices are rising at a rate that homeowners or those that are renting that house currently can't afford. So the property taxes are going up for a homeowner at a rate that they can't necessarily afford, or for a renter, the annual rent is going up at a rate that they can't afford. And why? Because of market pressures, right? There's also, though, a whole other set of social definitions that go along with this that says that with that there's demographic change, right? There's an economic, obviously, change. But there's also a racial or ethnic change. There's a cultural change in terms of the people's desires for the assets that they want around them. So there's a whole series of definitions that kind of telescope there.
What's the opposite of gentrification?
Oh, great question. The opposite of gentrification, I think, would be it's not necessarily just status quo, but it's continual upgrade of a neighborhood, continual investment, so that the people that are there are able to continuously maintain their homes, right? At a rate that doesn't allow them to slip into what we call obsolescence, where that they're actually behind. So continual upgrade, whereas the folks that are in them can continue to always afford to live there. And the houses don't filter down, meaning that they don't deteriorate with age. There's constant upgrade and investment.
But what do you call it when you have neighborhoods that that are on the downcline?
There's a neighborhood filtering process that begins with when the neighborhood is new, and it's usually full of homeowners, right? And then there's a filtering process that it goes down through a series of stages. And the first one is called infill, and then below that is a gradual deterioration to the point where a neighborhood changes from predominantly home ownership into rentals. And with those rentals, as they keep passing down, the housing deteriorates.
That's when you get the cars on the blocks in the front yard and the dogs everywhere.
No, I got cars on blocks in my neighborhood. Cars on blocks, no. but finally, you get to the point where you got code compliance issues. You know, that these houses aren't really shouldn't even be lived in any longer. There's a fire hazard or there's something going on. They're falling off their foundations. Cars on blocks, different story. That's more of a taste issue. And then code and compliance has to get involved. And then there's a couple of choices there. Do we raise that house? Do we take it and we raise it? RAZE, right? Do we take it out and then hopefully replace it?
Weed and seed.
Or do we fix it up? You know, do we try to put some money back into it and bring it back?
Okay, so you're looking at San Antonio. You're looking at numbers. What are the numbers telling you? Are we seeing some neighborhoods where we are seeing an uptick and people moving in and driving up property values?
Yeah. So what we did with this study is, again, we looked at we took a very what I would call conservative and not politically conservative, but just a very safe definition of gentrification, and said, okay. And we only looked at the inner city. We only looked within 410 because there's just too many variables once we start crossing school district boundary lines and getting into some of the newer neighborhoods, for example. So we needed to control. So we looked at neighborhoods within 410. And we looked specifically, and this is at market values, which is hard data to come by. But we looked for neighborhoods where the housing values were going up at a much higher rate than the norm, than the median or the mean, right? And we looked for that not for 1 year, but over 5 years. And I have to give some credit to students who are involved here because this was a senior thesis out of my program. Of the about 138 census tracts, which are just about neighborhoods in the inner city, 35 have market rates, housing market rates that are going up at a higher level, and actually in the 15% range. That they're going up over 5 years higher than the mean. Right.
So you said 35.
So about a third.
35 neighborhoods.
Yeah, about a third of them. So it increases in the top 15% of the county's rate of increase. 35 in the inner city.
Right. So that's a third. So what's the other two-thirds do?
That's I think what the interesting question here is, that well, what about those other two-thirds? And actually, what I want to do is hold on to that thought for a second, because we identified. So there's some census tracts that some interesting things might be going on in here as far as market value. And so we pushed further and looked at these in particular. And of those, five of them are actually stand out is a little bit more interesting than just prices going up, right?
Okay, well, listen, we got to take a break. When we come back, we'll get into these five neighborhoods where there's something interesting is happening.
Yep.
And figure out what's happening with the two-thirds. We're going to bring in City Councilman Diego Bernal, talk about public policy and what we can do to help neighborhoods stabilize and fight off catastrophic gentrification. I guess, can you use that word, catastrophic gentrification?
No.
No, no. Okay, all right, we'll figure out the right word for that. And we want to invite you into the conversation. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about changings of happenings to San Antonio neighborhoods. We're seeing changes in property values, what's going on, how do we harness the positives, and how do we manage the negatives to minimize those. We invite you to join the conversation. The number is 210-614-8980. Christine Drennan is here. She's the Director of Urban Studies at Trinity University. We're talking about her study. Also, we've got Diego Bernal, District 1. He's on the line. We're going to get him in just a second. But real quick, Christine, tell me about the five neighborhoods and what caught your eye.
Yeah, five of these 35 tracts had medium home prices that have gone up more dramatically than others. And in a couple of them, they've actually shifted from the bottom half of the city's distribution in the last 5 years to the top half.
Can you name them?
Yeah, so they're census tracts that you're not going to be surprised at. And I'm not going to give the numbers. I'll give you the names of them. Beacon Hill, Tobin Hill, and then the neighborhoods right down south of downtown in the Lavaca area. Another one, though, that's interesting is the area north of Alamo Heights. It's in the city of San Antonio, but it's in the Alamo Heights School District. It's also got it's got a mid-century housing stock, but it's got a home value that's going up a little bit quicker than the rest
of
the county.
Is that like Terrell Hills?
No, Terrell Hills is further to the east.
Okay.
It's not Sherry Hills, but it's in that area.
All right. So let me get Diego Bernal in this conversation. Councilman Bernal, thanks for joining us.
Sure.
Tell me why you are looking at this issue.
Well, partially because, you know, we've seen what's happened in other cities where some of their growth was so out of control that they woke up one day and asked themselves what happened. We're in a very unique position and a privileged position to look ahead. So, you know, Dr. Drennan is talking about 32 census tracts, but she's not saying that it's gone rampant and it's out of control. She's saying that they've gone a little bit faster, a little higher than other parts. What I think is most interesting about what she's found is that even inside 410, where everybody believes, you know, all the action is, two-thirds of the census tracts there aren't experiencing this at all in any way, and maybe even going in an opposite direction. What I think is interesting about the conversation, what I found most revealing about her study and in my conversations with her, which I thoroughly enjoy, she's genius, is that we have the two-thirds problem, and we're only focusing on 410. If we pull back and talk about the entire city, this is not something that's happening necessarily throughout San Antonio. It's not happening on a widespread level at all, but it's revealing that we have to have another conversation about housing. And I really think what's interesting, finally, just to give you the mic back, is we're in a very unique position because we're ahead of it. And most cities haven't done that. And I think this says a lot about the foresight that we're trying to show. How do we put ourselves in a position where we can deal with issues ahead of time as opposed to not, you know, dealing with them at all?
Our phone lines are open, and the number is 210-614-8980. Let's get some of our callers on the air. Bill has called in. Bill, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, thank you. Hey, just real quick, I'm a real estate broker. I live in Mankey Park, an area that possibly could be considered to be gentrified. But my question to Diego is this. I think the impetus or the spark on this gentrification issue was precipitated by a zoning issue change out in Beacon Hill. And in reading the newspaper article, it seemed to be more of a situation almost of racial bias, reverse bias. It seemed like a lot of the neighbors did not want those people living there or coming there to shop and spend their money. And
well,
those people, meaning the wealthier Anglos. And I'm just wondering, is that the perception or is it purely economics? And I'll take my
hands
off.
Well, I think
here.
That's certainly. That's
Bill,
certainly
thanks
part
for your call.
It.
Diego? Go ahead.
I certainly think that's part of it. Gentrification means a lot of things to a lot of people. And to some folks in the neighborhood, I think they did see, you know, wealthier, educated Anglos moving in and think, oh, there goes the neighborhood. We're about to lose it, which I don't think is necessarily.
Yeah, that would
very,
be terrible.
And I don't – that's certainly not my interest. But I do think that there's a certain zeitgeist, right? There's a fear that things that have happened in other cities – are happening here, and they're happening now. And I wanted to take a perspective and say, is that really the case? Overall, I think the answer is no. It's not happening that way here, but there are certain things happening in certain places that are worthy of our attention. So in some ways, this is a good exercise for us to go through to say, well, let's say what it is, but let's also say very specifically what it isn't.
Well, let's go over to Christine Drennan over at Trinity University, professor of urban studies. And what do the numbers tell you about demographic shifts?
That's kind of that second layer of definitions, right? Because people get really alarmed. First, we look at the economics, and then a lot will say that there's social and cultural changes. So then in the census tracts that we identified, and again, this is relative to both the center city and to the county, in some areas, the educational attainment levels are going up. More people have college degrees. Median household incomes are going up actually at about the same rate as the county. So those census tracts that we identified that are actually with a higher housing value, the median household income in some is actually less than the rise in the county. In some, it's just about the same. Educational attainment is higher, points to possibly some young families who have college degrees buying their first house. The percentage home ownership in some areas has actually gone down for these census tracts because of a lot of the development downtown, probably, with the new condominium and the new apartment complexes that have gone in downtown. So that's a harder one to gauge.
Okay. All right. Let's get another caller on the air. Mark has called in. Mark, welcome to The Source.
Hey, thanks for taking my question. It's actually more of a concern. I mean, you know, my wife and I are trying to become first-time home buyers, and what's become very discouraging is just how quickly the price per square foot has shot up. And, you know, it's almost like, you know, realizing that you waited too long to invest in Apple. It's just suddenly, you know, these houses aren't staying on the market very long, and they're $30 per square foot more than 4 or 5 years ago. And I just didn't know if you had any insight on that.
Okay, Mark, thanks for that question. And I think Christine can help us.
Yeah, it depends on where you're looking. Depends on where you're looking, because there's the housing stock in San Antonio is really interesting. A lot of it was built after the war. So as far as some of the older neighborhoods, which I think you imply that you're looking for, they're actually, relative to the other cities, aren't as many as those. So the competition is higher for some of that, for some of that housing. There just simply aren't as many. We've let it deteriorate. So that in order to get into one of those houses, the price has probably gone up, and then the cost of getting it back up to code is significantly high.
And it's hard to get an FHA loan for those homes.
That's the other interesting point, is that in order to get an older house, the financing can be a little bit tricky. So for a first-time homebuyer, if you're looking at an FHA loan, it's a little bit more difficult if that house needs a lot of work. So you're probably going to have to look for a house that's already been rehabbed. Under a conventional loan, you can still get something that needs a lot of work because you've got a significant amount of money already put into it.
So, Diego Bernal, what about a public policy solution for what we're talking about here?
Well, I think we have a lot of options, but we also need to continue to drill down on what it is that we're trying to accomplish. I think that the stats that Christine just rattled off were interesting. You know, for the areas where some of the housing prices are going up, it's not so much that it's wealthier people moving in, which is usually part of the narrative. They're more educated, but they're not necessarily wealthier. And in some ways, as a councilman, you often want that. You often want more young families moving into neighborhoods and establishing roots to stay there for a long time. In large part, is a good problem to have.
You want folks to come in, put down roots, become part of the neighborhood association, really invest in the neighborhood.
That's right. And based on their income, they're not necessarily what some folks would call outsiders. You know, they're very much part of the San Antonio fabric because they look just like the city does. So that's a good problem to have. That's why I'm saying it's a very complicated and nuanced thing. We can't talk about it with, you know, simple hashtags. What I think is interesting, though, is, you know, I live in one of the houses that Dr. Drennan is talking about. I bought a house right after law school in an old neighborhood, the neighborhood I used to live in. I certainly had enough money to purchase the house, but all the repairs it needed, because it's in one of these older neighborhoods, but not a historic district, I think, you know, especially at the time, was a challenge. And so what she's saying is, we've got older housing stock that maybe isn't necessarily part of the historic district or isn't as attractive, but unless we do something with it, it's going to repel potential buyers, and those entire neighborhoods, we have to make sure the bottom doesn't fall out. In some ways, in my mind, the conversation has shifted somewhat, not towards, you know, the traditional sort of Hollywood version of gentrification, but one towards where we need to spend some time, and that is affordable housing. And I don't mean affordable housing like Section 8 housing. I mean housing for the middle 70% of San Antonio, folks who make between, let's say, $35,000 and $60,000. That's, I think, where a lot of the real juicy conversation needs to happen now.
But looking at many of the neighborhoods that are not on the hot list that Dr. Drennan is talking about, there are some great houses out mm-hmm. there on the south side, on the west side, and the east side. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a young family could go in there and really put down some fantastic roots and it's not expensive.
No, it's not. But I think that her point, and this is why it's very nuanced, her point is they absolutely could do that. Mm-hmm. They could purchase the home. But the home has two phases. One is purchase, and then the other is repair.
Yep.
And for first-time home buyers, it's that repair piece that makes those houses challenging.
Well, it's also it's also the financing. You know, because if a first-time home buyer is usually going to get an FHA loan because it's got a lower down payment, but the financing on those is tougher to get for a house that's deteriorated in any way. It's just the banks have to be safer with FHA loans.
You know, this is probably something that a new HUD secretary could handle. Do you know anybody, Diego?
That's exactly my point, is that we're having this conversation way before most cities ever had it. Most cities let things get too far gone, and then they just threw their hands up and said, well, I guess this is what it is. Austin, for example, eliminated entire neighborhoods in favor of so-called revitalization, but those people are gone. We don't have to do that here. In San Antonio, we have the opportunity to get ahead of the issue and start to have very thoughtful conversations and policies to get it right. It shows a lot of foresight in my mind.
I'm still thinking about those two-thirds of the neighborhoods that are not doing so well. I mean, should we really be worried about gentrification, or be more worried about how do we get these two-thirds neighborhoods into becoming more vital and robust?
Mm-hmm. Well, that
exactly. It's a great question.
Right, and that also speaks exactly to our population. San Antonio is so interesting. It's not a San Francisco, and it's not a New Orleans, and it's not even.
And those are places where gentrification is going crazy.
It's crazy, and it's out of control. In San Francisco, either you live in public housing or you live in a $1 million house. We have an enormous middle class, and actually it is a lower working class population, but it's an enormous population, and it's housing that population that is a concern right now, because we have let our inner city working class neighborhoods deteriorate. Because we're not keeping up with them. We don't see housing as a public good. We see it completely and totally as a private good. So that is your problem if your house deteriorates. Yet it is a social concern. Our tax base is based on this, right? The social fabric of our communities is based on our housing stock. So we as an entire city have to be thinking about this, not just as individual families. So that's where policy can actually possibly step in, is can we have rehab policies for some of the houses that you're talking about that allow a young family to buy a house and then actually fix it up and be able to afford it?
Right, and we have to show people how to do that.
Yep.
And make it easy, make it a turnkey solution, make it so people can do that. All right. Well, Councilman Diego Bernal, thank you for joining us. And also Christine Drennan, Director of Urban Studies at Trinity University. This is The Source on KSTX. We'll be back after the NPR news.